Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cassiopea Pharmaceuticals Half Year Results 2020 conference call. I'm Alessandro, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to the management team of Cassiopea Pharmaceuticals. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Diana Harbort, the CEO of Cassiopea, and thank you for joining our first half 2020 results call today. I am joined by Chris Tanner, our Chief Financial Officer, Luigi Morrow, our Chief Scientific Officer, Alessandro Mazzetti, our Chief Medical Officer, and Marco Lecchi, our Finance Director. First of all, we hope all is well with you and your families during the pandemic times, and we're so happy you could join us today. We'll be giving you an update, of course, on our first half 2020 results and giving you also an update on our product development, our commercialization update, and a financing update. First, I'll call your attention to our safe harbor statement on slide 2 of the presentation, as we'll be making some forward-looking statements. So first, we'll go through the first half 2020 financial results, and I'll turn it over to Chris Tanner, our Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you very much, Diana. Well, as you can see, the net operating result of a loss declined slightly from last year. As last year, we don't have any revenues yet. We decided not to license out any of our products prior to having an approval, so we have no revenues. If you look at our cost, our research and development cost declined slightly, primarily because, of course, the Winlevi trial has been completed. We had an interruption of the phase 2 trial in women, and we haven't started with the phase 3 trial in men yet, so we're sort of in interregnum phase. Selling and general administrative costs increased slightly because we built up slightly the organization in the U.S., and there were some expenses there. But all in all, it's not spectacular. So if we go to page 6, you can see the details of the net operating expenses. Personnel expenses increased from 1.1 million to 1.8 million. And in principle, the net operating expenses, as I said before, decreased from 6.3 to 4.7 million. If we go to the next page, you can see from a personnel perspective, we have the same number of people at the end of the year. On average, it's been slightly different because that's why we have slightly more expenses this year, but it's 12 people that we have on our payroll. And if we then go into page 8, you can see how the breakdown is on the R&D expenditures. As I explained before, very reduced cost for Classcoder and Cream, which in essence is our main product, but which is awaiting, of course, the approval, hopefully, by the FDA on the 27th of August. And the other Classcoder on solution, the costs are down again because, as I said before, the clinical trials for the phase 2 in women were suspended due to Corona. The service costs on the other operating expenses are primarily costs. If you look at the next page, which is page 9, you can see what they consist of. There were some external consultancy services, primarily in conjunction with the work we're doing to establish how well the product can be marketed in the U.S., which price and to whom, et cetera, and so forth. Also, the establishment of our contacts to the key people in the U.S. and potentially bringing the product to market. Advertising and market expenses go in the same direction there. The rest of the expenses are really very minor. You can see on page 10 that the service agreement between Cosmo and Cassiopea continues in place with two different levels of charges that were made by Cosmo SPA to Cassiopea for the services that were provided both for the research and development perspective as well as for the secretarial and accounting services that were provided in the first half. If we look at the consolidated income statement, I think we've said enough of that. So let's move on to the changes of financial position. There has been practically no change in tangible and intangible assets, no change in the tax receivables, so the total non-current assets are nearly identical. There's very small changes in the other receivables. Where we have is an increase in the cash and cash equivalents because, as you know, we issued 750,000 shares to our existing shareholders in June. We used the proceeds to repay the outstanding debt that we had with Cosmo, and what we have here is the remaining cash, which is $8.5 million. So you can see that if you look down on the liability side, the total non-current liabilities have declined from 10.7 to nothing, and the current liabilities slightly increased. This brings us, and this is important, to a total equity position of $21.4 million. This is important looking forward, keeping in mind that we need to have positive equity from an Italian legal perspective. So if we go to page 13, I think we've run through this on an explanation basis. The change of equity position, I don't know, but maybe if you have any specific details, I can go into and explain this later on, but I think we can move on to that. I think the important part is that we issued 750,000 shares, which have a nominal value of €1. I'm now on page 15. We have a share premium correspondingly of €30 per share issued, was $21.6 million. If you look at the expense for the stock options in the first half, it amounted to $469,000 due to the stock option plan, which was approved by the shareholders at the last shareholders meeting. I think this is more or less completes the position. If you look on page 16, the consolidated cash flow statement, in essence, to summarize, the operating profit, respectively, lost, declined to 5.3. If we then have the cash flows from financing activities of $12 million, leaving us in the end with a cash and cash equivalents position of $8.45 million, which is a substantial increase vis-a-vis of what we had at the end of June in 2019. That completes the financing position. If you have any questions, maybe you may want to ask them right now.
Right, great. So moving on to our product development update, I'm moving now to slide 18 for those of you who are following along. Many of you have been following the company for some time, so you may be familiar with our pipeline slide here on slide 18. Notably, our clascoterone cream 1% is waiting for our PDUFA date, that is in August 27th, so just under a month. Right behind that is clascoterone solution, which had a positive phase 2 in males and will be moving into phase 3 after we have completed the negotiation with the FDA and our special protocol assessment. Our clascoterone solution for androgenetic alopecia in females is currently in a phase 2 proof of concept study, and we'll give you an update on that shortly here. And of course, we have two earlier stage compounds, one a novel topical antibiotic and the other a novel immunomodulator, both which have had positive phase 2 proof of concept results and are in product development for formulation development and further CMC work before we move them into phase 2. But we'll start on slide 19 by giving you an update on clascoterone cream 1%. This product received conditional approval from FDA on our Winlevi trademark proprietary name. The NDA was filed last August and further was accepted by the FDA, where the FDA established August 27th, 2020 as the PDUFA date. As many have heard me say before, we've invested in an extensive medical affairs program that has really seen a lot of success. We have increased the visibility of not only Cassiopeia, but of clascoterone and its scientific data and mechanism of action in the dermatology community. We've got 5 published papers, 23 posters and abstracts, and 24 meeting sponsorships with over 100 podium mentions at medical meetings by key opinion leaders. And we completed very extensive market research with payers and segmentation research with healthcare providers, which I shared with you in earlier presentations. So, of course, the next step is the PDUFA date here coming up in a month. On slide 20, I just list for you here some of the very recent substantial medical publications that have been done for clascoterone, and I call your attention to the 2 on the left, where our phase 3 data has been published not only in JAD, that's the long-term extension study results there in JAD, but also the pivotal phase 3 results in JAMA Dermatology. Some of these articles or publications have received up to 20,000 downloads, just the JAMA Dermatology article alone. So we've gotten quite a bit of interest and quite a bit of receptivity in our clascoterone publications, and we knew this would be important leading up to the PDUFA date of the product. I'll turn it over now to Alessandro Mazzetti, our Chief Medical Officer, who will give you an update on our clascoterone solution for androgenic alopecia on slide 21.
Thanks, Diana, and good afternoon to all of you. As far as concerning clascoterone solution, in slide 21, you can see that after the completion of the dose ranging phase 2 study in male, we identified the most effective dose for the solution, and with these results, we had an end of phase 2 meeting with FDA during last November, to plan all the following activity to reach the complete filing for the NDA. And we agree all the further development for the NDA filing. Last May, we submitted to FDA a special protocol assessment for the phase 3 program for the trials that should complete the clinical part of the development for the clascoterone solution to define the efficacy and the safety in male. This special protocol assessment will be finalized in the next months because, as usual, with FDA, we will have an exchange of the opinion on different points of the protocol. And we think to be able to start with the phase 3 before the end of the year. In the meantime, an extensive medical affairs program also for clascoterone solution has been done to increase our visibility in the dermatology community with 9 papers and several key opinion leader podium presentation. And at the end of the last year, we started also the phase 2 program for androgenetic alopecia in female. The next step would be, as I told, to close the discussion with FDA on phase 3 program in males and to complete the enrollment of the phase 2 study in female. In the next slide, the slide 22, we summarize the situation of the trial in females. This trial is a multi-center double-blind trial that is ongoing in Germany on 280 subjects. The trials is planned in four groups. Two groups treated or subjects treated with our solution, two different concentration, 5% and 7.5% twice a day. Another group with the vehicle solution, and the other one with minoxidil solution, that is one of the most used solution for alopecia in female. The treatment will be of 6 months, and the subjects will be enrolled in, is planned in 7 centers in Germany. Due to the COVID situation, the enrollment was put on hold during the last 3 months, but now we restarted the enrollment. Up to date, we have 180 subjects is already increased versus this slide, 80 subjects enrolled in the trial, and we do hope to be able to complete the enrollment by the end of September to have the top line results within the first half of the next year. For the clinical plan, it's all. If you have some questions, please.
Yeah, we can ask the questions at the end. Thank you so much, okay. Alessandro. Appreciate that. Now I think we should turn to Clascoterone Cream 1% and some of the commercial update. First, I'll start with the U.S. acne market. The acne market is a very important market in dermatology. It's a very high volume, very concentrated market with about 8,000 providers, that is doctors and nurse practitioners and physician's assistants that are in a derm's office, accounting for almost 60% of the prescription. So it's a market that can be easily targeted by a manageable number of sales reps. And there's a very high unmet need among healthcare providers for a novel approach, especially one that targets the hormonal aspect for all acne patients. Spironolactone, which is an oral antiandrogen that's used off-label, not indicated for acne, is the third highest prescribed drug in all of dermatology, regardless of indication, with over 2 million prescriptions a year, and it's limited only to use in females. And acne is treated by polypharmacy, and according to the American Academy of Dermatology guidelines, doctors are instructed to use multiple complementary drugs to address different parts of the acne pathogenesis. So this is the reason why in the United States, most acne patients leave the dermatologist's office with two or three prescriptions for acne. And our market research has clearly demonstrated the positioning for Clascoterone Cream 1% around this unique mechanism of action and shows significant market share uptake that's predicted among very high-value providers. Now, a little bit on the size of the acne market here on slide 25. Acne is a disease that affects 50 million patients and continues to be a very relevant disease. It's a $5 billion U.S. market. And interestingly, the treatment options are limited to old therapies that were developed over 40 years ago. The last new mechanism of action approved for the treatment of acne was in 1982 when isotretinoin or Accutane was approved. Since that time, the drugs that have launched have been new combinations or new dosage forms of older drugs or new versions of existing mechanisms such as new topical retinoids that all have very similar mechanism of actions. And what we know is, looking at the pathogenesis of acne, is that topical options really only address 3 of the 4 factors in acne physiology, leaving a gap in treatment regimens. And specifically, there are no topical regimens that actually have an effect on the sebaceous gland function. Now, our market research with payers in the United States shows that payers continue to cover acne as a medical condition, and our research indicates that this will not change. And also, 90% of branded prescriptions for acne are written in the office of a dermatologist. And importantly, dermatology physician's assistants and nurse practitioners account for almost $1 billion of that $5 billion market. Now on slide 26, I give you a brief update on some of the market research comments coming out of our studies. And it's clearly confirming that clascoterone can be positioned as a very foundational medication for acne treatment. These doctors clearly understand that the product has clear differentiation as a first-in-class topical androgen receptor inhibitor. And almost all physicians surveyed agreed there is a need for topical treatment that targets acne that's triggered by hormones. And they go on to say that all acne has a hormonal component, and it's just a matter of what extent. And they go on to say that all patients should be on it, like a retinoid. So overall, physicians are reporting a very high utilization of clascoterone that's primarily driven by its new and unique mode of action. And 90% of healthcare providers said they would be extremely likely to prescribe the product. So to put this in context, on slide 27, our market research is confirming that interest in clascoterone cream is similar to the interest that doctors have in products such as Epiduo and Axone. And so you can see here that Axone and Epiduo, in their first year, did 340,000 prescriptions or 542,000 prescriptions in the first year and peaked at nearly 1 million prescriptions, or just above 1 million prescriptions a year. So this is the sort of response we're getting, and it looks like they're predicting this product will be of this size. And some of the comments that they specifically make about clascoterone cream 1% certainly are their efficacy ratings, comparing it to those products like Adapalene and Axone gel 7.5%. They like the decent reduction they're seeing in inflammatory lesions, and also they're very interested in the long-term efficacy that you can see, by the way, in our JAD Phase 3 article. Clascoterone also had some of the highest tolerability ratings of all the products that were rated, given its very positive safety profile and its very small rate of discontinuation. And also, healthcare providers are seeing Winlevi could be used in moderate patients, so they can target both the inflammation and the hormonal component of acne in these patients. Now, talking about price, I thought it might be helpful to list here for you what the acne brand wholesale acquisition prices are currently in the market. So if you take a look at all of these products you see here, what you see is that the average acne WAC price in the U.S. ranges from $500 to $900 and varies in pack sizes either from 30 gram to 90 gram. So the average for a one-month supply of a topical acne product wholesale acquisition cost is $613. And the newer topical brands that have been launched recently, Aklief, which is Galderma's retinoid, is $554. And Amzeeque, a topical minocycline, is $485. While the newer systemic brand, say Sera, WAC price is about $911. Now, it's important to note, and I'm sure you guys that have been covering the pharmaceutical market for some time understand that there's quite a significant deduction from WAC to net based on a couple of components, certainly the percent discounted for wholesaler distribution, but also discounts to payers and patients for market access, and this will vary over the life of a product. But this puts in context for you what the market WAC pricing is in the United States. Now, as I mentioned, we did a quite robust market access research, and so I thought I'd share with you some of the research coming out of very in-depth interviews that were conducted last summer with payers that represent 92 million commercial lives. Acne is a very stable and very predictable payer market. They manage these products quite consistently without major category evaluations. Acne is not a big disease on a payer's list of diseases. Our market research confirms that payers will continue to treat acne as a medical disease and will provide coverage for patient acne visits and for products. And although price is always a key driver for the decision of the level of coverage for any product, the innovation and the new mechanism of action of our product does matter. We also know that drugs that have over a $600 monthly WAC will have higher restrictions, and we are focusing on targeting clascoterone to be in its own unique category as a first-in-class androgen receptor inhibitor so as not to be compared to other categories. Now, we're expecting coverage in at least 70% of commercial lives without highly restrictive prior authorizations or multiple-step edicts, and we have determined what might be an acceptable net price per month in order to achieve that level of coverage. Now, we have had our first meeting with payer yesterday, and we have found that payers have had a very good reception and a very good willingness to meet with us for introductory calls. In fact, payers that represent greater than 75 million lives had scheduled meetings with us within the first week that we've contacted them. Moving on to slide 30. I've shared with you this launch approach in the past, and I thought it would be worth mentioning again, is we've adopted a very practical, stepwise approach to investment and launch preparation. We've carefully expanded our resources commensurate with the FDA and regulatory progress of the product. We have been and we are in the midst of exploring multiple M&A options to optimize the commercialization and the profitability before building our own organization. We believe that it would be very advantageous to not have a single product sales force, but to have a multiple product sales force promoting our product. We have built a U.S. management team that has had very extensive dermatology experience in over 20 derm launches, and we've built a very solid foundation for launch. I've talked to you about the extensive medical affairs program that has really increased the awareness of not only clascoterone, but our new mechanism of action and the clinical data in our dermatology community. And I've shared with you the market research that we've conducted where we clearly understand the positioning, the messaging, and the market segmentation of our product. And, of course, in market access, We have conducted research on the value prop, the downstream payer analysis and pricing, and we have introductory meetings with payers scheduled over the next 8 weeks. And we've identified, of course, areas of external or contract support rather than build internally. If we choose to launch this product on our own, we will likely use a contract sales organization. And we would, of course, evaluate the size of that group post-COVID. Our plan is to launch in a two-step launch approach where we'll be having a market access launch at PDUFA in order to advance our negotiations with payers in advance of a commercial sales launch in approximately March of 2021. Now, turning over a bit to the commercial side of androgenetic alopecia, or clascoterone, which is served by a clascoterone solution, I'm moving on here to slide 32. Now, androgenetic alopecia is a condition that is caused or influenced heavily by dihydrotestosterone, and this dihydrotestosterone has a negative impact on the hair follicle in some patients. This DHT causes the follicle to shrink over time and causes the hair growing out of each of the follicles to become thinner and thinner until that small follicle is unable to grow new hair. The existing treatments were developed 20 and 30 years ago, with minoxidil being the first treatment as a topical. This brand name at the time was Rogaine. Now this product is generic and over-the-counter and also sold as an over-the-counter generic. And this is a vasodilator that is thought to bring better nutrients to the hair follicles. Propecia, or finasteride, is an oral androgen modulator, and it shows an anti-androgenic activity on the hair follicle. But because it's an oral, it has systemic anti-androgenic side effects and is in fact not indicated for women and has some very negative side effects for men. Though that product is also generically available, and neither of these products are promoted at all in a doctor's office. Our drug has a direct effect on the DHT's negative effects on the hair follicle and would reduce that hair miniaturization and this dermal inflammation that also occurs. But when you think of all these treatments are currently cash pay treatments. Propecia is a prescription, minoxidil is OTC, and we would expect our product to be a prescription product as well. But these products are not currently covered by healthcare insurance. These are cash paid for by the patients. And these products, whether it be Propecia, minoxidil, or our product, clascoterone, would be used by patients to prevent the loss of hair and to grow back new hair. So they tend to be chronically used products. Now, if we move over to the androgenetic alopecia market, this, on slide 33, androgenic alopecia, or AGA as it's often called, is also known, especially in men, as pattern baldness. And you can see the graphic here. It commonly appears in a certain pattern on a patient's scalp. And it's the progressive loss of terminal hairs on the scalp in this very characteristic pattern. And it's caused by high concentrations of DHT at the hair follicle, which shortens the hair growth cycle. Now, in women, the AGA looks a bit differently. It shows up as more diffuse hair thinning. And there's very known psychosocial complications of AGA, including things such as depression, low self-esteem, et cetera. And this is a clearly true. We get emails from androgenic alopecia patients around the world each week inquiring as to the status of the drug or as to their interest in getting into our studies. And we understand that studies have indicated that women are more likely to actually suffer from the psychosocial complications than men, likely because, of course, hair is a sign of beauty in women, and hair loss is a bit less acceptable than pattern hair in women than the pattern hair loss that's so common in men. But 80 to 95 million Americans suffer from androgenic alopecia, and both men and women are impacted. It's thought that the market is 60% males and 40% females. But a very small portion of these patients are estimated to get treatment. And this is, in the literature, thought to be because there's so limited treatment options available, especially for women. And I, like I told you, treatment options are limited to these very old therapies like finasteride and minoxidil that were developed 20 and 30 years ago. Now, we tested the product profile with both providers and patients and found that they both these categories, are excited about clascoterone solution for AGA. Healthcare providers were particularly receptive to the product profile, and they were emphasized the novel mechanism of action and the impressive clinical before and after photos. All the provider specialties that we did research with suggested high utilization, with a reported option in over 60% of male patients and 50% of female patients. And they reported high adoption rates that would take and replace finasteride and minoxidil equally. You can see some of the comments that they've made on the site here. I'm excited about Breezula. We haven't had anything innovative in a long time. I've never been able to give female patients something that could really fix their issue. This product could give a lot of hope to female AGA patients. Now, we also tested the profile with Rogaine patients or minoxidil patients, and nearly half of these patients indicated that they would at least be highly likely to request clascoterone solution from their physician. We also tested the cash pay potential for pricing with patients, and we found that our product could likely be priced like other cash pay lifestyle drugs in the marketplace, regardless of indication, for between $100 and $200 per month. This ends my comments here on the commercial side of the business, and now I will turn the financial overview section over to Chris Tanner.
Thank you, Diana. I think we discussed most of it already in the past. In essence, we've raised 750,000 shares, issued 750,000 shares, raising a small capital increase. We did this small because we felt that it made more sense to wait until we have the approval of Winlevi before doing another transaction. We're aware that the present cash position of $8 million and the $6 million undrawn credit facility is not sufficient to finance the either an acquisition on the one hand or the building up the organization ourselves, but we would delay any further capital market transaction until post-approval. What we're also doing is instead of, as an alternative, we are considering various non-dilutive financings. In the U.S., these are typically known as quote-unquote royalty-type financings. In essence, it is a financing that is linked, where the repayment is linked to the revenue streams of the product. There's quite a large market and a number of players in this market. This is one of the alternatives that we may be considering for financing down the line. This, of course, is all in conjunction and depending upon what is going to be happening on the strategic side, i.e. whether we acquire somebody or whether we merge somebody or what other strategic alternatives we finally decide to pursue individually. It doesn't make sense to do these upfront. I think we need to organize everything in such a way that we're ready to pull the trigger when we're there. So this is what we're going to be doing in the next few weeks.
Thank you, Chris. And as we wrap this up, on slide 37, I list here some of the upcoming milestones. Of course, the most important of which is our PDUFA date here coming up within the next month on August 27th, followed by the launch of Clascoterone Cream, which I said would be planning a market access launch first, followed by a sales launch next year. We are working, of course, from a milestone perspective to finalize the special protocol assessment with FDA on the phase 3 program for clascoterone solution in men. And as far as the clascoterone solution in females, we'll be completing the enrollment in September and announcing the top-line results for that phase 2 program in the second quarter of next year. That is the end of our prepared comments, and we look forward to receiving any questions.
The first question comes from Ram Selvaraju from H.C. Wainwright. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Blair Cohen on for Ram. Just a couple questions for me. First, I wanted to clarify something you said on the call. For the enrollment for the phase 2 in females, you said the enrollment is now 180, not 165?
Correct.
And how many in screening still?
At the moment in screening, we have other 25 subjects. So, that's
okay.
Why I told that we think by September to be able to close all the enrollment.
Okay. And for the NDA filing, was all of the data published in the JAD paper included in that filing?
Yes, the NDA, of course, the clinical data is quite comprehensive, you can imagine, in the new drug application, but the JAD and the JAMA articles or publications disclose the pivotal two phase three program for the pivotal results, as well as the JAD article discloses the results of the open-label long-term safety study. That's also part of the NDA.
Okay. And have you started labeling discussions with the FDA yet?
Yes.
Okay. And then lastly, just regarding the commercial infrastructure, are you still waiting till after the approval to start building up this commercial infrastructure? And then as far as, I know the situation with sales reps is fluid, but how are you thinking about in a post-COVID environment, how you're going to hire in a situation where face-to-face reps, face-to-face promotion may not, really exist? And what's the difference between the rep situation that's going to happen post-approval in September versus the full commercial launch in March?
Thank you for the question. Now, certainly commensurate with our launch approach, the plans and the execution around a sales force happen post-PDUFA, not before. And frankly, I consider us to be in a very unique and lucky position that our decision around commercialization, by the way, whether that be by any of our strategic alternatives or alone, allows us to make decisions around sales force sizing and sales force strategy in a world that takes into account the post-COVID situation. And I find that we're quite lucky to be able to do that, considering had we made the assumption and hired early in the pre-COVID world. Because it's very clear that many dermatologists' offices are not seeing sales reps at this time, although they are accepting virtual engagements or, frankly, meeting sales reps outside of their offices. And what we've found just in the post-COVID world is that doctors actually have more time to engage in education and in CME, and they can do so in a way that's actually even more convenient for them in the comfort of their own homes. They can participate in a virtual education forum that allows them to get CME without taking substantial time away from their practice, flights, costs for hotels, et cetera, to attend some of these meetings. And what we found is because our scientific data and this new MOA is so compelling and interesting to healthcare providers, they are predicting, and listen, we've had several advisory boards recently over Zoom with, you know, 15 dermatologists at a time talking about the data and their views of the product and, in fact, their market environment. And they find our data compelling so as that they would be very interested in virtual engagement as well. So I'll just sum this up by saying I think it's we are in a very lucky and unique position to be making commercialization decisions, taking into account the COVID world. Now, you asked about the difference between a market access launch and a sales launch, and I think it's worth mentioning. A market access launch involves a much different group than a sales launch. So a market access launch involves meetings with payers by contract national account managers who we have hired on our behalf to meet with payers to introduce the product. We can have those introductory clinical meetings now, pre-PDUFA, and we will continue to have them, like I said, over the next 2 months. We've got many, many of these scheduled where the focus is on the clinical data. So a medical review and a medical presentation of the clinical data. And we're able to engage these payers because they're so interested in the MOA. Now, contract negotiations would happen in the last quarter of this year. So that's what I mean by a market access launch, which is done by a very different group and a very small group versus a sales launch, which would be engagement with healthcare providers and doctors.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Philippa Gardner from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. I have a couple of questions, if I could, please. First of all, I just wanted to come to your comment on your fluid interactions with the FDA on Winlevi. I wanted to ask, has there been anything unexpected in any of those interactions that you've had with them? And then my second question was just a clarification point on some comments from Alessandro regarding the start of the phase 3 trial in males with Breezula. I think you said on your last call that you're expecting the first patient in the first quarter, and I think earlier Alessandra said the trial to start at the end of this year. So when you talk about the trial starting at the end of this year, is that getting sites up and ready to receive patients, or is that first patient in by the end of this year? Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, yes, we've had fluid interaction with the FDA, quite normal and customary, and we have not had anything unexpected. As far as the clarification around the phase 3 in males, this is highly dependent on reaching agreement with the FDA on the special protocol assessment. So it's not going to be easy for us to give you a specific date until we have reached agreement with FDA on the SPA. And I just want to remind everybody in the context of the market, I explained to you that finasteride and minoxidil were approved 20 and 30 years ago. So putting that into context, the FDA has not seen a phase 3 program in androgenetic alopecia since iterations of those products were approved. And because of that, we think it's very wise to reach agreement with that with the FDA on our phase 3 program before we embark on the trials. So we will, as soon as we reach agreement with the FDA on the SPA, we will announce what our plans are, more specifically, what the trial will look like and when we will enroll, et cetera. That's the reason why we can't give you a precise date on when these trials will start, because they involve interaction with FDA.
Can I just follow up to that, please, Diana? Because you kind of sort of preempted my question, but I guess what is the main sort of point of discussion on the trial design? Is it the length of the endpoint, or what is the main thing that needs to get sort of locked down still?
Well, in reality, in a special protocol assessment, many, many, many attributes are locked down with the FDA, as you call it. So it's the typical actually review of the entire protocol: length, number of patients, what are the endpoints, what is the active portion, what's the long-term follow-up portion, etc. So it's basically the entire phase 3 protocol. But please remember, there isn't quite as if we go to and we compare this to acne, right, and this is a very different case. FDA has seen numerous phase 3 programs for acne over the years, whether they be of old products with new dosage form, sizes, strengths, and et cetera. But there's been a number of acne products, right? And so the phase 3 protocol isn't so exotic, right? It's a well-worn path by many, many companies and many products. That is not true here. Because minoxidil and finasteride were approved quite a long time ago. And we think it's highly important for a small company to de-risk our phase 3 program by getting absolute clarity with the FDA on what they will require. So we look forward, once we've completed this negotiation with FDA, and it could take a couple of rounds, to share with you what our plans are, just as soon as we have more specifics to share with you.
That's great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Bob Pooler from Valuation Lab. Please go ahead.
Hi, Diana and team. A few questions, if I may, just following up on Breezula. On that phase 3 program, do you have an estimated cost of that phase 3 trial now?
Of course, we have looked at what the cost would be given our current assumptions, and of course, given as we blow out the financing needs of the company. But we won't be disclosing that at this time. We think it would be best to, of course, give an indication of that in the context of having made an agreement with the FDA on the protocol itself.
Yeah, that makes sense. Just on the finances there, could you provide some guidance on the operating expense for this year and also your current cash reach?
Can you repeat the first part of your question?
Yes, just guidance for this year on your operating expenses for the second half or the total year, and also how is your cash reach?
So what I will say is that, and before I turn it over to Chris, is that our operating expenses in the fourth quarter of this year will be highly dependent on our commercialization alternatives. And we are advancing a number of these, and we'll later announce them after PDUFA once we've solidified them. So, of course, the operating expenses in the fourth quarter of this year will be highly dependent on our commercialization strategy. So therefore, we can't issue a guidance on that, but just know that we have $8 million in cash, and we also have a $6 million ability in loans, an open line of credit. So we think of the available cash to the company as for the combination of the cash on hand plus our credit facility that's still open with Cosmo, that would equal a total of then 8 plus 6 equals $14 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then just on Winlevi, how are your discussions? Because I know you are having discussions also with some of the major dermatology players. How are they going with those potential players? And again, when would you expect to announce an agreement if it does happen? Of course, that's post Winlevi approval, but do you expect to announce that this year, or be it likely more in the early next year, if it happens?
Well, like I just mentioned, we have we are advancing a number of alternatives simultaneously right now, mm-hmm. and I would expect that we'll have clarity and we'll be able to update you after we've decided which route we'll take. And I'm hoping that in fact will be this year.
Okay. And then just one final question on Winlevi. On U.S. approval, how fast could you actually file in the EU and potentially other countries?
Well, we have been concentrating in the first priority on the U.S., and that is because of the pricing in the U.S. compared to the pricing for acne products in other territories. So we have not been prioritizing an EU filing. Though it's possible we could pursue that. And that's specifically because of the low pricing for acne products in the EU, as to make it not a huge priority for us at the time where our company needs to be focused on the absolute most important value drivers to its shareholders. Sure.
Okay, thank you. That's clear. And fingers crossed then for U.S. approval of Winlevi at the end of August.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Barbara Blaha from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I have two quick questions. One is, has the facility in Milano already been inspected by the FDA, or... if not, when do you expect this inspection?
Is there another question too?
Yeah. Then it is a follow-up on the cash, because Chris said that you paid back the loan to Cosmo, but then you said that you have only $6 million available from the loan. So could you theoretically use the $20 million? The entire original amount, or do you have the $6 million left because you paid back?
Thank you. So on the facility in Milan, actually the FDA had an inspection scheduled in May, and they canceled the inspection because of COVID. They have instead requested documentation in lieu of or in advance of a pre-approval inspection. We've had multiple back and forth with the FDA on the documents, normal and customary. And it's looking to us at this time that they may not inspect the Cosmo facility. And just to give you a background, that Cosmo facility has been manufacturing pharmaceutical products for several countries around the world for some time, and it has in fact had regulatory inspections by multiple regulatory bodies, including the U.S. FDA. So it's not a new facility, and it's not an unknown facility to either the FDA or other regulatory authorities. And Chris, I will turn the direction to you over to answer the cash question on the available outstanding loan facility with Cosmo.
Yeah, I think Barbara, we have to look at the ability of Cosmo to provide financing, sort of like a backstop facility, right? We are at the present time considering the financing. As I said before, longer-term royalty-type financings, respectively, in conjunction with strategic transactions going to the capital markets. And As a consequence, that is what we're going to be relying on if we need financing down the line and not on the COSMO facilities. All the more, since if we would be having both, we have to be aware, if we would be having a royalty financing, then the COSMO facility would be subordinated to this, and then it would need to be canceled anyway, right? Because most of the royalty-type financings require that they have a first lien on revenue streams, and this, of course, would make having an additional classical corporate banking facility very difficult. So we're just moving these ahead in more or less in parallel. We know that in the case of need, COSMO is there to provide additional funds, but in principle, what we have right now is what you can see and what we've announced to you.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Zain Kazi from Mintelier Corporation. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Just a quick question in relation to the clascoterone cream 1% launch timing. With market access planned for quarter four in 2020 and the sales launch in March 2021, the question was in relation to revenue and when you anticipate that product generating revenue, and secondly, at what point in that process will medical professionals be able to actually prescribe that product?
So in the launch timing I described to you, which is the market access launch first, followed by the sales launch in March, in that situation, the revenue would not be occurring until March.
And in terms of the dermatologist having the ability to prescribe the drug, so that you're saying that would be post-March, is that correct? Or
correct, yep.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for answering.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Wilbur Elliott from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning or good afternoon. Hi, Diana, how are you? I want to ask about some of the data you provided with respect to previous launch analogs. I think it was slide 27 of the deck. Any one of those in particular you think stands out as being a better comparator for clascoterone upon launch? Just thinking about Aczone and Epiduo, both of those products generated relatively high numbers in the first year versus their peak, and I would expect your launch to encounter a little bit slower build, kind of given the uniqueness of the product and for the new MOA. But just wanted to get your thoughts around that.
So what's interesting about Aczone and Epiduo is their launches occurred in a situation where market access was quite different at the time. And specifically as it relates to the net sales, the gross to nets on those products during the early years of launch would likely be different than the more aggressive gross to nets that are seen in the early launch period for most any product in the U.S. market. But to be clear, as it relates to the overall interest and the overall reception that we're getting from healthcare providers when they predict their use, the market share that they appear to be willing to give Winlevi quite quickly is so large that we're slicing it by 60% because it's so large. And we think, of course, that's driven by this is the first new MOA in a long time. They know acne is hormonally driven, and they have not had a product that could be used in such a topical way, meaning a way that could be used in both males and females, And we also know, just to be clear, to put this in context, spironolactone does over 2 million prescriptions a year. So if I were to put that on this slide for peak sales, that would dwarf the size of these products. And that's an off-label oral antiandrogen used for acne. So to be clear, perhaps in the beginning, the uptake could be slower than Axone or Epiduo. Clearly, we haven't launched the product yet. We don't have our sales force yet. But what we can tell you is that the reception is so overwhelmingly positive that it's predicting a product of the size of Epiduo and Axone.
Okay, thanks. And if I could just follow up with respect to spironolactone, other than just cost and coverage issues, any other impediments in terms of physician willingness to convert from that oral to the topical?
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I just want to be more clear, because it brings up the point about how we're positioning the product. Oral spironolactone is used in females for what is so-called hormonal acne, which is actually a misnomer, because all acne has a hormonal trigger, and if you actually look at the pathogenesis of acne, you see that that androgens have a major effect on the sebaceous gland, causing increased sebum production and increased inflammation. And we can see with our mechanism of action that we have a very powerful MOA in affecting that sebaceous gland function, in both the production of lipids as an anti-inflammatory. And you can actually see that by our phase 3 data. But to be clear, we are positioning, and as our doctors have told us, that Winlevi should be positioned for both males and females for the treatment of acne. So just to put that in context, also just understanding that there's been quite a bit of antibiotic stewardship that is an interest by the specialty, by doctors in general, regardless of disease, to use less antibiotics. And this, of course, has positively benefited oral spironolactone, where instead of patients moving to oral antibiotics, that is, females to oral antibiotics, they're being moved to oral spironolactone. But to be clear, we are not targeting just the conversion of spironolactone patients to Winlevi. We think that is actually not the most relevant and not the most broad positioning. And we've been encouraged by doctors to position our oral anti-androgen receptor inhibitor for both males and females.
Got it. And just one last follow-up, if I may. You had mentioned and touched upon the current list price dynamics in the derm space and the relatively high gross and net deductions out there currently. Guess as you're beginning to have conversations with payers and thinking about ultimately net price of the product, any thought that this could actually command somewhat of a premium on a ASP or net basis versus currently market products, just given the novelty of the MOA?
So we, of course, will have those sort of conversations publicly after we're launching the product and announcing our WAC, and then talking about what we're expecting in gross to net after we've had negotiations with payers. But what is clear, and we've been very careful in our labeling with FDA, that this is a first in class. And so that from a compendia standpoint, it will stand alone as an androgen receptor inhibitor. And we think that's important so that it's not referenced price to other drugs because it's in its own unique class. So we've been mindful of this dynamic from the very beginning as we began the drafting of the label itself. We will look forward to updating you publicly once, of course, we've launched and have more information to share in this regard. But to be clear, our market, it's very important. We understand that it's one thing to generate prescriptions. It's another thing to make sure these prescriptions get filled. And so we are clearly understanding, as we're meeting with payers now, what their requirements are, and we're also, of course, establishing patient access programs, et cetera, that are also important components of gross to net, but are also very important to make sure that when a prescription is generated, that it actually gets filled. But as you know, this is a process that takes some time, and also reflects in gross to net improvements over time. That's the reason why we're beginning our launch first with a market access launch, followed by the sales launch.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
There are no further questions at this time.
Well, thank you, everybody. We appreciate your ongoing interest in Cassiopeia. And we, again, continue to wish you and your family and your organizations good health in these times. And we look forward to interacting again, hopefully, on or about August 27th. Thank you very much.